This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodl Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Our first question comes from Philip Murphy, and he asks, if it takes 8 minutes for light to reach the Earth from the Sun at 1 AU distance, and Saturn is approximately 9 AU away, does that mean that Saturn will go out 140 minutes later? So the time it takes from the Sun to Saturn, and then Saturn back to the Earth. Also, when will we stop seeing Venus? Before, at the same time, or after the Sun goes out?
Well, the answer here is that it's the time it takes for light to get from the Sun to the planet that's reflecting off and back to the Earth again. It's often said if the Sun were to suddenly stop shining, we wouldn't know about it for 8 minutes. And the reason that is because it takes light 8 minutes to travel from the Sun to the Earth. It's about 93 million miles, 150 million kilometres. It's what we call an astronomical unit. It's our basis for measuring distances in the solar system. Now, for an object like Venus, if Venus wasn't exactly in front of the Sun, then we'd see the light from Venus go out the same time, because the light travels from the Sun, bounces off Venus, and hits the Earth. The actual distance that light travels is about the same as it takes from light to get from the Sun to the Earth directly. But if Venus is in a different point in its orbit, the light has to go from the Sun out to Venus, and then out to the Earth, which is a longer distance, so it would actually go out slightly later. Saturn orbits at about 10 times the distance to the Earth from the Sun, or 10 AU, so it takes light about 10 times as long to reach Saturn. So that's about 80 minutes. If you were standing on Saturn, you wouldn't know that the Sun had gone out for about 80 minutes after it had. Now, we see Saturn because light reflects off it from the Sun, same as any other planet. Depending on where the Earth is in our orbit, we can be between 9 to 11 astronomical units away from Saturn. So it takes at least 72 minutes for light to reach back to us from Saturn. So if you take the 80 minutes it takes the light from the Sun to get to Saturn, and add that to the 72 minutes it takes the light to get from Saturn back to us, it means that the light travel time is at least 152 minutes in total. But remember that we wouldn't know about the Sun going out for 8 minutes after it had, so we have to take that 8 minutes off. So if the Sun were to spontaneously go out, we would see Saturn disappear about 144 minutes afterwards. But to be honest, that's probably the least of your worries.
But we're not in danger from the Sun suddenly going out.
Yeah, I mean, the Sun will eventually die, but it's not going to be a sudden thing. We'll have plenty of warning, and it's not due to happen for, a good 5-6 billion years.
So we're not suddenly going to watch the Sun just disappear from the sky.
I wouldn't hold your breath.
Our next question comes from Archimie, who says, as far as I understand, astronomers are relatively confident about the parameters of the habitable zone around a star. Are the same parameters and relationships applicable to moons? Can a habitable moon exist around a planet that is outside its star's habitable zone?
Well, the answer to this is that we first have to define what a habitable zone is. Now, it's generally thought of as the region around a star where planets should have liquid water on their surfaces. So liquid water is very important to life as we know it, and it's one of the prerequisites for a planet to be habitable. The habitable zone exists because stars heat up the planet. Too close to the star and water boils, and we end up with a planet like Venus, which has no oceans because all the water is in steam in its atmosphere. Too far away and water freezes, and you end up with an icy body like a comet or like Jupiter's moon Europa. Now in the middle there's a so-called Goldilocks zone where conditions are just right to have liquid water on the surface. The precise definition of the habitable zone is complicated by many things. Not all planets in the habitable zone will be habitable. Gas giants don't have surfaces, so they won't be habitable. Planets can have eccentric orbits, which means that sometimes they're in the habitable zone, sometimes they aren't. And the host stars around which these planets orbit can sometimes be inconducive to life. They can flare, or they may not live long enough for life to arise on them. Now, liquid water can exist in other planets outside the habitable zone. There's things like the greenhouse effect, which can heat up cold planets. And heat generated by radioactive material inside the planets can also keep them warm. In fact, the Earth gets about 20 degrees, or roughly 10% of its heat, simply from the decay of radioactive materials in its core. One important part, as far as moons are concerned, is tidal heating. Now, this is due to the gravitational attraction of the giant planet which they orbit. If you have a look at Io, Europa, moons of Jupiter, these moons are heated up to really high temperatures just because of the pull of Jupiter's gravity on them, which melt their interiors. In fact, Io is the most volcanic body we know of in the solar system. On moons like Europa, this melting causes the icy mantle inside the moons to melt, In fact, Europa, we think, has a subsurface ocean, which may be habitable, and who knows, life may have arisen in it already.
Wow, so there could be life in our own solar system on some of these moons?
Well, there might be, and there are various missions proposed by NASA and ESA and other space communities that are planning on looking for it. But we're talking several years in the future here.
Oh, wow. Wouldn't that be brilliant, though, if we could find something in our own solar system?
It'd be brilliant. It may not happen, but it will tell us something, even if we don't find it, about how common life is in the universe.
Okay, our next question comes from Chris Giltnam, who emailed, is there any way of telling from the radiation given off by accretion disk around a black hole if the black hole is swallowing ordinary matter or dark matter?
That's a very good question, and we'll have to explain a few things here first. Now, accretion disks themselves form when material, it's usually gas, spirals into a black hole. As it spirals in, it orbits faster and faster, and all the atoms in the gas that's falling in have slightly different orbits, so they keep crashing into each other. Now, these collisions cause friction inside the gas and heats it up. When you heat something up, it glows and gives off radiation, which we see as light. This is where we see the material, the accretion disk, as the matter falls in. Now, dark matter is a hypothetical kind of matter that behaves like normal matter that we're used to, but doesn't interact except via gravity. Now, it is currently theoretical only, but it explains a lot of what we know about the universe, from the speeds at which galaxies rotate to the variations we see in the cosmic microwave background, the imprint of the Big Bang. So we're pretty sure it's there. But because it doesn't interact with ordinary matter in the same way, it doesn't have these collisions between atoms that heat it up. So we can't see it. So as far as dark matter is concerned, it would simply fall into the black hole and we'd never know.
Wow, that's brilliant! So dark matter and ordinary matter is falling into the black holes, but it's only ordinary matter that's giving off radiation, all the other dark matter, not a signature at all, no way we can tell.
Exactly.
Our final questions come from Mark C. and Lyndon Baldwin, and they ask very similar things, so I'm going to sort of couple them together. What is space expanding into? And if the universe is expanding at an accelerating rate, what is the upper limit to the maximum velocity?
Okay, hold on to your hats for this one, because it's going to get tricky. Now, we know space is expanding. We can see this when we look at distant galaxies. They're moving away from us. And the further away they are, the faster they're receding. This isn't because we're cosmologically unpopular. It just means that everything is moving away from everything else. This is too slow to see in human timescales. In fact, your body would grow about 1/6 of a millimetre in a billion years. But it's the very fabric of space that's expanding. Now, we call this the Hubble Law, and some of the best evidence we have for the Big Bang's existence. So the first question was, what's it expanding into? Well, the answer is nothing. This is where it gets slightly complicated, because the universe contains everything, even space and time. So there's nothing outside the universe for it to expand into, not even empty space. The universe doesn't even have an edge as we'd understand it. Some theories even suggest that if you were to head away from the Earth in a straight line, you'd eventually end up back at the Earth. Now, this is a little difficult to get your head around, and you probably need several years of astrophysics just to comprehend this kind of thing fully. In fact, most people who claim they comprehend it really don't. But if you want to know more about this, there's a really good book by Michio Kaku called Hyperspace. We'll put some links in the show notes about where you can get hold of that. The second question is, how fast can space expand? Now, the rate at which space is expanding is getting faster. We know this from distant supernovae, and we think it's caused by dark energy. There's a whole other show's worth about explaining what dark energy actually is. How fast it can expand? There really isn't a limit on that. The listener who asked the question suggests it might be limited by the speed of light. The expansion isn't really such a speed as a rate. Most of the universe is actually expanding away from us faster than the speed of light, which is why we can't see it. But those parts of the universe aren't actually travelling at that speed. It's just that the space in the middle is growing. And space can grow at any speed. In fact, if we're right in our understanding, it'll eventually start to expand at the rate that will pull galaxies apart, then individual stars, then planets, and eventually it'll grow at such a rate that it'll even pull the individual atoms apart. Now, this is known as Big Rip Theory and may or may not happen depending on who you believe. But we'll let you know in about 34 billion years.
I'd like to thank Mark C., Lyndon Baldwin, Archimy, Chris Giltnam and Philip Murphy for sending in those questions. And thank you, Ian, for answering them all brilliantly. And hopefully won't be pulled apart by anything in the future.
You're welcome, and hopefully neither will I.
And to all the other listeners, don't forget you can send in your astronomical questions via the website.